Welcome to Natural Recovery from Suffering. This is Scott Killaby. So you guys have seen, well, maybe you've heard, the podcast episode with Dan. There's two of them. The second one is called 12-Step versus Authentic Recovery. And of course, we did that title to provoke. Let me explain that. When Dan and I first met, Dan's the co-developer of this work. Obviously, we have that in common, the development and plus the recovery piece, which includes codependency. We both have codependency, and you could say that more than being addicts, I would say Dan would say this about himself, he was codependent, but he had addiction. And on the surface, I was a codependent, but I also had addiction, because codependency is just buried anger or hurt, where you take care of other people's feelings. You're not authentic when you're a kid. And so that inauthenticity and that ego creates suffering when you get to be an adult. And then one of the ways of dealing with the suffering is addiction and or still taking care of other people's feelings. A lot of people that came into our treatment center, Dan and I noticed they were like people who were on heroin or drugs that were people pleasers. They went along with everything growing up. They had buried anger. And when they got into recovery, it was a mess because then they just did it for love and approval like me and Dan, and they didn't get to the buried anger and they would keep relapsing. So there's a reason that we talk this way. There's a high relapse rate. The success rate for addiction recovery is still very low. There's a reason to criticize the field. We were in the field. We're like whistleblowers, if you look at it, because we were the first mindfulness-based, truly repression-based treatment center in the country. And then there was no support for that because the state of California just wanted to get people sober for 30 days or 60 days and get the insurance companies wanted them in and out, not so much the state. They didn't want to pay for any long-term real recovery that gets to the root of things. So within that system, we felt very limited. We have a lot of feelings about that because eventually we closed the centers down and just came online because we saw that it's just too slow. Even though the mental health and addiction treatment field is starting to be more trauma-informed, the way that they deal with it is very superficial. A lot of talk about it. There are some processes that are good, but we're talking about buried anger and hurt. So we can't just dance around that topic. And then there's a lot of codependent helpers in the treatment field who will not, because they don't feel safe with their own emotions, cannot guide people early or late recovery into authenticity, true working with buried emotions. These people are relapsing, not just because they're addicts, but because of the people that are helping them and the institutions. But see, it's like this, when you're creating the DSM and you have a choice to put the narcissist in there or addiction, And codependency, guess what goes in? The narcissist and the addict, the addiction, but not the codependency. That should have gone in there. Because we don't have identified people with mental health and addiction. This is a family and relational dynamic. Going from the very early age, the child has to hold certain emotions back and then become something that they're not, and then has to continue doing that to survive. And then uses things to keep those emotions down. And so here's the problem for me is, as someone with buried anger who had codependency and addiction from that, my recovery involves feeling and expressing what's true about my own experience and not just going along with some of these things out there that didn't work for me and that kept me in repression. When Dan and I share, though, some people will hear what we're saying is like, oh, this is just the latest worldview or something. And they stay safe. They don't actually go into the body to see if they have buried emotions. And they argue with the topic by just listening to it. And that's the repression. So it's ironic to be bringing out something that processes the root of suffering, like an experiential method. But all people hear is, this threatens my 12-step paradigm. But they won't admit it. We can't. It's not your fault. trust me, it's not your fault. I'm not placing blame on you at all, because Dan did the same thing and I did too. I did it before Dan. See, I left the 12-step world because I was still suffering and I needed to get to the root of it. I came to non-duality and became a teacher, and great things happened. I'm glad I left. But when Dan came many years later to develop KI repression inquiry, I had already been a teacher for over 10 years. And I'd written a book on addiction, and I own these treatment centers. So I was in a different place with the 12-step. I didn't have any allegiance to 12-step. And I haven't for many years. And people know that. But am I anti-12-step? No. Look, I had buried anger. I was anti-everything. But I buried it. So as I came out of repression, I just saw, well, my feelings about 12-step just need to be felt and expressed. It's like, well, you helped me avoid buried anger. You saved my life in the beginning, but I didn't get to the root. And I was angry about that. Of course, that's how we have to recover. Those of us with buried anger, we have to see how we really feel. We will not get stuck in the anger if we process it, because we were already stuck in it. It was buried. And it was producing the addiction and the people pleasing and all that, seeking for love and approval. So when we finally get to it, by feeling and expressing what's true, by finally getting to the buried anger or hurt, we know how we feel about things. But when Dan came, he didn't know how he felt about what we were developing versus the 12-step world that had given him his sense of security and his, you know, recovery up until a certain point. The first time I met Dan is he called me up, and he hadn't even come to our center, and he said, I have X number of days sober from porn addiction. And I said, you're still counting days? I think I was actually, that was actually a, I don't know how he felt about that. I don't know if that triggered him. Well, because anger repressors often can't be honest about it. But he later on, he said it was very helpful. But I wondered if that in that moment he felt threatened, because we often get our identity around in 12-step, you know, how long we've been sober. And that's why it hurts so much if we do relapse, and so much shame with it, I think, because of the emphasis on that. And that's all I was saying is, like, are you still emphasizing that? Because you could be setting yourself up for, if you go and use porn, a bunch of shame coming in. And then your whole identity of the one who was sober is gone. Because it's not you. It's not ultimately you. And you have to go deeper than that. So then he came, and I hadn't gone deep enough yet. But I wasn't counting days. I had unhooked from the identity, but I hadn't gotten to the true root, which was the anger repression, and neither did he. So we developed it together after that. And that changed everything about what I do as a teacher, and obviously his life, because now he's out here with me, and he was not like that. He came as a client in the very beginning. So he's been on both sides. I've been on both sides. We've both been the addict who everyone's trying to help. And we've both been the helper who's trying to help the addicts. Well, when Dan came, though, and we finally started developing the work after him, his being a client, I was just feeling him out from my own buried anger, because I couldn't be direct still. Whether he had one foot in the 12-step world and one foot in the world of just processing the root of it all. And I remember being trepidatious. We started to talk about 12-step, and he asked me a question. He said, do you think that 12-step and this inquiry we're developing, because we hadn't gotten truly to buried anger yet, can go together? And I knew that it wouldn't, because I'd already dropped the 12-step. And the reason I dropped the 12-step is because there were beliefs there that kept me out of my body. Like, well, the need for love and approval, belief I'm an addict, so many days sober, kept me distracted in a identity, and I couldn't get to the root, and I still had addictions on the side that were not drugs and alcohol. So, and for me to heal, I knew I had to let go of those beliefs, and I already had. So when he said, it's like saying, can I have those beliefs, which we believe for safety and to get love and approval, and be free? And of course, now I would say, to anybody because I'm not trying to get your love and approval. No, no, you don't have to believe me, but I'm not going to stay quiet just to get your love and approval. No, my perspective is no, 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 because beliefs keep us safe. And many beliefs in recovery, or many things in recovery are beliefs, or they're being driven by the trauma. So it's just what we have to, that just has to be our paradigm currently. Consciousness, there's a deepening, there's an awakening process, there's an embodiment process to what we really are. If we get hung up on belief systems about this, this, and this along the way, for a long time, we can't experience that deeper freedom. So I knew I wanted to help him, but I also needed his love. So I wouldn't say to him, no, Dan, you just have to drop that. But I also learned through the years is that he couldn't, because he needed those 12-step things to keep him safe from the buried anger. And then we finally developed the work on the buried anger. Then he let go of all that stuff around recovery that was keeping him from getting to it. And then it was, we were in alignment naturally, but he came into it through his own experience. I have to remind people that he wasn't following the leader like my belief systems. We developed work together and he came to the same insights as me. And he says them differently, actually. He talks differently than I do about self-abandonment. So yeah, I guess what I'm trying to say today is, if you could, I've got a podcast episode coming out called, the title has something to do with drinking the KI Kool-Aid. Because I don't think you can hear and actually be free. And what I mean is a landing is a landing is a landing. So if there's a worldview that comes up to keep you safe, even if it has the letters KI in it, doesn't matter, it's still keeping you safe from buried emotions. So I don't come out here to champion a perspective, a worldview. Just so you know how I see this, is not that. It might feel that way, but what I'm doing is I'm trying to point us all to how we filter everything. We filter everything for safety and to get love and approval, and that creates separation. And that filter, you could say that the very basis of it is the repression. So in other words, I might have a desire to be really free and authentic and whatever that is, recover. But what happens is I just go for love and approval and I feel shame if I use something. It's like that. And we just keep beating ourselves up. There are so many anger repressors who, if they could understand that a lot of their desire to stop using comes for the need for love and approval. It's like I started using because of buried anger. I didn't know it. And I was getting love and approval from everyone. And then by being addicted, it's like you can let go of the love and approval seeking and can just for a moment be here or be in your own state of, you know, altered state where you don't have to, like, for just a while, cater to the trauma bonds in your life. And I would often do drugs that way. It's like, just fucking get away from me. Mom, dad, you know, because the codependency in my family ran deep. It's like you were either an addict or you were sober in my family. And there was no in between. There were no nuances. So, you know, it's like, who are you in the family? And if you're an addict, you've got so much shame. Because there's, you know, half the family is against you and you have to hide. So when I came out of repression, it's like, fuck that. That's the whole problem right there. That's the whole fucking problem, is hiding and trying to be good boys and girls. I'm done. You know, that's my recovery. If that's a worldview, then it is. But no, I'm just done with that. And other forms of suffering like that. I'm done with, like, trying to convince someone to be different. And instead, I just say, process your buried emotions and I'll have boundaries until you do. And and I'll love you as best I can, and I'm sure you will too until then. But how are we ever going to connect from the falseness of codependency or addiction, as if that's who we are at all? Addicts, we're not that. We're also not people who help addicts. We're not that. We're not addicts. We're not recovering addicts. Not ultimately. Wait, you know, as a codependent, I played that role to a T. I see that in my family. Like buried anger and hurt, showing up as the rescuer, the one who is trying to help the people that are really fucked up in the family. And it's disgusting to me. You know, and I always felt that way, but I couldn't express it. I always didn't want to decide. I don't want to decide to be on one side of a duality. I just want to be myself, and I didn't know that. I took the don't use no matter what to an extreme. And I almost died because of it. And people, some people have heard this and some people haven't. Like, this work was forged in the fire of real suffering. I wanted to die before feeling and expressing anger to people, and I wanted to die before ever taking painkillers again. And a lot of that was just the conditioning of my family and 12-step. Dan used to sit there with me. I'd have serious nerve pain with all these thoughts coming up, like, I can't live like this. And all I needed to do was take a painkiller so that I could reduce the nerve pain enough to start processing the buried anger that created the chronic pain. But I wouldn't do it. He would sit there with me. We'd have to do inquiry because I'd have this 12-step conditioning in me that just said, don't. And then that don't, which wasn't taking care of me and never did, by feeling and expressing what was true, I had to process it just so I could take a pill. And that pill saved my life because then I will be developed anger repression inquiry because of that. And then I was able to get off those very quickly because of doing anger repression inquiry. But then I had to get on Xanax. I couldn't be the fucking good boy. God, don't you see? Like, we need room to live. And if we're conscious enough and we're connected enough with people, we can get through those things. But if we have to isolate because of shame, it's hard to get through those things. And I had a family in which I didn't feel like I could tell them what I was going through because of this division between the good and the bad, the ones that are using and the ones that aren't. And of course, that's my family drama, you know, but we all have our own trauma. What else are we going to talk about but our own experience? But I'm sure you can relate in some way. That at some point in your recovery, you just want to be real. And people will think, well, that's an interesting new paradigm. No, it's not. It's not a new paradigm. To actually feel and express all your emotions, it's not really. But it can sound like it if you can't feel and express all your emotions. So, you know, the reason I say this is because people have come to us, just a few people, saying, well, what you guys are doing is just putting up another worldview. And I'm like, no, what you're doing is not checking the buried emotions that make you say that. And that's why it's hard to express this, because we weren't either. We were doing the same thing, because we get something out of all that. We get a lot of reward through that whole, you know, are you recovering or are you not? Or are you an addict or are you helping the addicts? We get so much out of it that nobody wants to give it up. The helpers don't want to give it up. The people who are codependent in families, that's all they have. In some cases, that's all I had. With the people close to me, even my partner, later on in life, just repeating the pattern of now he's got a serious issue with addiction and I'm the savior, you know, because I've had all this experience in treatment centers. Now I'm going to help him. I'm not going to help him. That's not what love is. You don't teach your lover. You love your lover, but the codependency, I couldn't even see him because of the buried anger that wanted to be so helpful and didn't want to feel and express my true feelings my whole life just so I could get love by helping people who were struggling. And it didn't work because it wasn't authentic love. And those relationships in which there was codependency in my family or those romantic relationships, those didn't last because they're not real. Do I have to be involved in all of it with people who don't care about telling me who they are and are just focused on other people? Or so isolated within themselves and their own addiction that they can't do anything but get their needs met in manipulative ways. See, the healing for us, a lot of us who are either codependent or addicted, is going to be the same. It's just going to be boundaries and authenticity and finally being able to connect with people from a real place. That's all that it's going to be. And you might not get it through KI. You might get it somewhere else, but get it. And don't treat it like a worldview, because then you won't get it. And get it when you feel safe. I'm talking to the people who reached out. When you feel safe to go into your body, because there's a lot of people listening who are like, Scott, I already get it. Why are you saying this? I'm saying this because nobody said this to me. You know, when you're in the codependency or the addiction or the latest worldview that you think is your truth or you think is the truth, but it just keeps you safe and it gets you love and approval, nobody's saying that to you. Nobody said it to me. Because authenticity doesn't matter when you have repression. What matters is to stay safe and get love. We can always disagree. We can always come to our own resolution, but if we don't talk to each other, if I'm never open to listen to criticism, the only way that I was able to develop this work is to hear the criticism of my own paradigms. I finally heard it, that the non-dual teaching was limited and contained a bypass. I finally heard it, that the 12 step didn't get to the root, and so I had to do something different. You will too. If something doesn't work, it may not be KI. But if you come into this in the way that you do everything, self-protected, holding on to whatever keeps you safe right now, and also claiming that it's not a belief, you won't get it, or you'll delay it. The actual healing. But remember, that's what you want. Because we might say we want recovery at the surface, but when we go to the unconscious, we want to stay safe, get love, approval. And deeper in recovery, we get more sophisticated getting our needs met. Like people, long-term recovery, they have status. People look up to them, or I became a teacher. That's codependence. We find ways to hide. And it's just not real. That's the issue. It's not. Nobody can stand as an empty vessel and just help someone because there's codependency. We're interconnected completely. And those of us who are in families together or relationships, that's our intergenerational trauma coming through us. That's not just Bob, the brother, or Karen, your sister, trying to help, or you, Tony, the addict. That's intergenerational trauma working itself out in a dynamic. And each person has their own trauma equally. But the one who uses looks like the one that we need to focus on. But that's just the way that that person is dealing with their trauma, and the other people are dealing with it by focusing on that person. Because the trauma is just, I can't be with my own feelings. I can't just feel and express what's true, have boundaries, help, but don't make your life depend on it, or even your well-being at all. That's what codependents do. It's like, if they're not okay, I'm not okay. Just be okay, regardless of what they do, and then you'll take care of your addictive issues. You'll find your authentic recovery, because you'll see, well, you don't want to recover to get love and approval, but yet you're driven on it by it, or safety, but yet you're driven by it. So at some point, your recovery, if it's authentic, don't even call it KI, will have to open to that, those buried emotions that create that pattern. Otherwise, it'll just be the next worldview that you believe to keep you safe and get you love and approval. And then you'll think that KI is that. And by arguing with it before you do KI, you'll be staying safe and getting love and approval by whatever, in whatever community or paradigm you're already in. That's fine. But if you want an authentic recovery, then you should look at that, because that is the trauma. That we continue in the trauma, it's just more sophisticated. Because we need to stay safe. One of the most sophisticated forms of like a trauma shelter are the spiritual teachings that include a bypass. Because all of life is trauma until you heal that. I mean, you can argue with that, but what I'm saying is the unconscious drives it all. The duality, the shadows, the identities, they're there for a reason. For survival of that separate self that's not really who you are, but who you have to take yourself to be to get that love and approval and stay safe. So I'll leave you with this, because you know I like to do 30-minute podcast for attention spans. I don't think it's cool to sit here and talk for 2 hours. But hear this. KI is an open door, but it's not an open door just to welcome every belief system, because we're not doing that. That's not what we're doing. We're not bringing together everybody, because we're former anger repressors. That kumbaya would just be more like trying to accommodate everybody. It's just how we got sick, and you have to see that. So we can't accommodate everyone and just bend over and change the method and do something different because somebody disagrees. But we need to listen. And we are. That's how we develop the work, is by seeing that, you know, yeah, Dr. Sarno has good stuff. We've got all this science out here, good stuff. Peter Levine, Bessel van der Kolk. We had to really give up our paradigms. Frankly, the spiritual paradigm had to go for me. The recovery paradigms had to go for Dan to do this. And that's just a natural process. And it'll happen for you if you're on a path like this, and there's no urgency to it. So when I say you're welcome here, I really mean that. But you're not welcome in a way that we just sit here and like don't say anything to each other and believe whatever, because that's the inauthenticity that led to the addiction in our families. That's it. No boundaries, nothing. We can't do that. It's a matter of our own transformation. We just can't do that. So what does that look like? It looks like when people are ready to process the deep somatic work or do the deep somatic work, then there's a place here if they want to come here. And people will come here like not sure about that, like Dan did or I was, but because you don't trust yourself yet. That's what repression is just not being able to know how you think and feel and who you really are. And an awakening process is what you need. But you want to process the buried emotions that produce all that falseness and awareness. Because the awareness, the awakening to awareness, if you're on that path, won't show you why and how the patterning keeps coming. The patterning helps us in the awareness stay in the bypass, because if I can be nice and kind, I'll never have to feel my buried anger if I just meditate. So see how it continues. You have to be really careful when you move into awakening, because if you had buried anger or hurt in 12-step and you move into this, where do you go? Do you go away from us where we're talking about the buried stuff? Or do you come towards us, even if you're not quite ready and you have one foot in the 12-step world? Come anyway. That's what Dan did. See, okay. Yeah, that's challenging because when you start to process at the unconscious level, it threatens the 12-step or other paradigm. That's true. But anything that can be threatened isn't real. Anything that can be threatened isn't real. I think something about A Course in Miracles like that. I've trusted that completely to see what is real for me, what is my experience. And my belief systems always stood in the way of that. Even if they were very profound recovery-oriented mottos or ways of being, that I needed those at the time. That's the important thing to remember, at the time, for safety, love, for stability. But that's not going to lead me to the real. I have to jump off of that. And one of the things we have to jump off of is the paradigm that keeps us safe from discovering that it's really buried emotions that drive our addiction. And so if you want to call that a new paradigm, I would say the reason that people get away with that kind of thinking is they don't read the science. See, because when you read the science, you didn't have to say, well, okay, science has a paradigm. And then so does Bessel van der Kolk and Scott Killaby and then Ken Wilber and all these people popping up who are talking about buried emotions. They all have this paradigm. But at a certain point, it doesn't work because in this new paradigm, we have a somatic test. And the somatic test goes beyond the mind that says whatever it says and goes straight to the body to see if you have buried emotions. And once you discover it, then it starts to change your paradigm because you see, well, this new paradigm of KI was right on one issue. If we're right on one issue, there's a trust. And because we don't trust ourselves, we can begin to trust us, because if we show you a somatic test in which we're not telling you something, you're seeing something within your own experience, that starts to develop self-trust, which is the antidote to addiction. Because trusting, feeling, expressing what's true connects you to people. It's that disconnection that leads you away from people into addiction. Authenticity builds trust. Inauthenticity, falseness, doesn't build trust. And an addict needs trust when they are recovering because they don't trust themselves. But how do you trust somebody who's trying to fix you? Who's trying to tell you that the addiction is the problem when you learn that no, like the science says, the buried emotions create the addiction. The addiction is a temporary solution that isn't the best solution. There might be a better solution. But the problem is the root of suffering. See, when Dan and I had the buried anger and were codependent, we wouldn't have been truthful with you. We would have said something like, yeah, just come on, bring your beliefs, just try some inquiry. It's kind of all the same thing. We're all just recovering. That was to get your love and approval. So now if we're more honest as we are, it's not for your love and approval. See that? So even if the title offends you, just know that we're not doing this to get your love and approval. And that's a big part of the addiction. So we need to be able to disagree in the world of recovery in the future. That's what I want to say. If we can't disagree, those of us who have buried anger creating codependency and addiction, if we can't disagree, we're continuing in the trauma of childhood. We couldn't ask questions. We couldn't speak up and we couldn't disagree with dad or whoever else was overpowering us. We have to be able to disagree in recovery so we can discover who we are and then discover who other people are and connect. Agreeability is part of buried anger. People go along with things their whole lives and then they stuff those emotions down, they get addicted, and then other people try to come and fix them or change them or help them and they're going along with it. Just go along with it. Go along with their paradigm. So when I got clean, somebody came to rescue me and took me into their paradigm, 12-step. And I was angry about it, but I couldn't express my anger because I wanted to decide what I wanted to do. but I didn't feel like it was given a chance. And I don't blame that person. But when it comes to authentic recovery, I can't just go to that person and say, thank you. You helped me. But at the same time, I was brought into this world and I thought it was the only world. And I continued to get love and approval and keep my anger buried. And I got really, really sick later. So no, it's not going to be just people pleasing because we don't recover that way. But if we can be honest and if we can process, then what we're really doing, what me and Dan are doing is we're saying, no, we're not trying to get your love and approval. We don't want everyone to come, but if you come and you're really resistant to this, this ends up being a source of suffering for you. And if we don't have boundaries for us. So really we're talking to the people who, that they're ready just to hear it the way that we have to express it without being very defensive of their paradigm. And they're going to be more open to the work. And then people who are triggered are just going to have to work that out and decide for themselves what they want to do. Because I don't have any desire. I wanted to come on here and say, to pull you into this, because that's the codependency. I don't have that, which is an important part of this work so that you know that we don't have that. Because if you look around, it's everywhere. Thank you for listening. There's a link to my April 1st KI Jumpstart group, which is not focused on addiction, but if we work on that too. I teach people how to do the work in a group for 1 month. And then also the link to just come and talk to me. We have new one-on-one programs, both my intensive program, and in some cases, we have scholarship programs now. Lower price for people who want mentorship. You have to qualify for it. If you're interested in one-on-one with me or someone who works under me, come and talk to me through that link in the description. Thank you for being open-minded and for continuing to come back, even if some of the stuff we say triggers you. I know from my heart, that's not my intention. My intention is to finally live my life authentically, to not seek love and approval, and I'm doing really well. And that's why I keep talking about this subject. Thank you.